This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, welcome to the Morning Run with Lynmark, Shariz Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning. It is the 29th of May, a Wednesday, and we're halfway through the week. How are you guys doing?
Good, thank you. How are you guys?
I know you're super happy because you're going to be off air for the next 2 days, Lynmark.
Yes, this is my Friday. I'm going to have 2 days off. It's going to be fantastic. I'm going to sleep until 6 a.m., which is
a lie.
You can do better than that. Make it eight. I'll give you eight.
Okay, that'll be right. 4 hours past my normal wake-up time. I think I can manage that. Yeah, but in the meantime, we still do have a show for today, and I'm sure we have lots of exciting things to talk about. What do we have lined up?
Well, do you dare break dress codes at work? Do you like to stand out from the crowd and not conform? Have you done it before? Because if you have, maybe then you're a future boss or leader.
Ah, that's interesting. Definitely.
Yes, say Shariz. Yeah, men wears a black sweater every day.
That's right. Second thing is that Facebook just opened its office in KL, and Tun M was there, and he took the time to sort of educate, everyone about the right use of social media. So we'll find out what is that all about.
So if you want to weigh in on our discussions, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Please do, because we want to hear from you. And we'll be back with more stories, interesting stories, after this. But first, we have Wake Up by Arcade Fire. And then after that, How to Email Like a Boss. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Wake Up by Arcade Fire. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Shariz and Xiaoning. Now, have you ever hesitated over an email and waffled back and forth over whether you should send it, rewritten it about 40 times? Apparently, that's quite a common practice. And this designer called Dani Donovan, she's quite famous for her designs illustrating how to live with ADHD. She produced a infographic almost that shows how to email like a boss. And she's got a couple of interesting do's and don'ts. So, for example, instead of saying sorry for the delay, you can say thanks for your patience. Instead of saying hopefully that makes sense with a question mark on the end, you can say let me know if you have questions. I guess it's just how to sound firm and decisive in emails rather than sounding uncertain. And I fully admit that I make almost all of these mistakes all of the time in email form because I'm just concerned that that my tone is not going to translate well over a written format. So fair I kind enough. Of overcompensate on the other end.
Yeah. So, I can imagine how much time you spend just trying to get out of that web of trying to get, come across as someone nice on email or someone who is politically correct most of the time. And I think I'm guilty of that. And I think that out of this nine, one of them I could relate so well is the... sometimes you're trying to explain things and over here it says the wording is hard and you spend like a good 40 minutes trying to explain it, where I think her suggestion is that, hey, look, if you can't put it in words, hey, can I just pop by and just explain everything and maybe it'll make much more sense.
This is so true. I am so guilty of sending these emails that don't sound like a boss at all. Of all the nine, I think the one that I'm very bad at is like when I want something done from somebody and I'm not firm enough to give them a date or a time or like get it done. And I'll ramble on like, do you need any help on this? Just wanted to check in when I should just say, when can I expect an update? I don't know how to do that. Because I just feel I'm so bad, like, rushing people to do things.
But on the flip side, right, guys, when you see emails that, I guess, fulfill all of these do's, that say, you know, thanks for your patience, that say, that sound firm and decisive, do you actually think about that? Do you even really notice that they're not couching their email in kind of really nice, gentle terms as we do?
Yeah, I think there are times when you can say, whoa, that's a bit bossy, as in, hey, take it a notch down. I mean, but that's not often. A lot of the times you're just taking the email objectively. I mean, and that's when Wong Xiaoning would not help, when she doesn't include the details like when you want it and the time that you want it and how do you want it?
Yeah,
put some detail, for goodness sake.
Yeah, that's true. I'm guilty of not giving the detail. And then I think I'm also guilty of when writing these emails, I overanalyze what people would think when they read it, when actually maybe it's just... Yeah, you just read it simply as it is. And nobody really thinks too hard about it, and I could just be firmer, quicker, and, you know, sharper about it all. Remember a few weeks ago, we talked about military emails.
Yes, that's right. So you start off your email with the bottom line.
Yeah, what you want done, right? Immediately. No beating around the bush.
I'm guilty of that. Like, I do this whole bracket thing and just important or, you know, what needs to be done. That's the first thing I would write.
But that's good. I like that because I would rather have the important fact of the email written in bold and in capital letters right at the top of the email, then have to sift through like three paragraphs of fluff and long rambly emails to understand why you're emailing me in the first place. And actually, another thing that I do, because I overanalyze as well and I overthink and I stress about how, you know, the recipient of the email is going to feel when I send this, I kind of tell myself, okay, no, I'm just not going to think about it. I'm going to write this email in under 2 minutes. And send it off.
Yeah.
Just don't look at it again after that. Because just to try and preempt myself, because I know that I'm going to get anxious if I spend more than 2 minutes on the email. So that's one of the ways that I take to try and gamify myself almost.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Sometimes when I do that, and then occasionally I realize, oops, you know, there's just something that I just did not do. So, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to print this out and just going to put it on the side of the table. And there you go. One less thing to think about. You know, whenever you have something, you know, that you want to put across that is similar to what, you know, this table has to say, just copy it.
But actually, so when you find that you've made a mistake in an email, how do you respond to that? Because sometimes, you know, when you accidentally, for example, send an email without attaching a file, how do you, and maybe your recipient calls you out on it, say, hey, you know, you said that you were going to attach something your email, it's not there. How do you respond?
This is when Outlook is a beautiful software, Microsoft Outlook. We haven't used Outlook for a long time, haven't we, in this office? Because you can retract your email within a certain period of time.
Provided the other person hasn't read it already.
You can still retract it, but so that person will not have access to the email. May have read the initial email, but then once you do that, it will, you know, it will sort of
but he still knows, he or she still knows that you didn't. Yeah. But I guess this person wrote, you know, about don't apologize about it. Just say, you know,
what's wrong with saying sorry?
I don't know. She says just say thanks for letting me know in a way. Nice catch, right? That's her point.
Yeah, I just suppose don't get too bogged down in apologizing for your mistakes. Correct it, apologize, and move on. All right, let us know what you think. How do you prefer to email? Do you mind your email language? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back to talk to you more about dress codes after this, so be sure to keep it here. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Bob Dylan with The Times They Are A-Changin', and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin-Mark Sharitz Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning. And the times really indeed are changing, because dress codes, for one, are no longer as fixed as they used to be. I mean, but still in a lot of industries, you know, you're expected to wear a suit, formal wear, a tie, certain colours, but sometimes people do break those dress codes, or at least kind of push the boundaries a little bit, and there seems to be interesting reactions to them. So there's this BBC article that explores this idea that people actually are accorded a certain amount of social status for daring to break dress codes.
Yeah, so I mean, this is when being able to question certain things, for an example, whether or not it makes sense to wear certain clothes, especially if I were to relate to our Malaysian weather. I mean, those ability is what I would, those are the things that I would sort of admire of a person when they start questioning what's right and what makes sense in their daily lives, you know, from wearing something that is warm to something that could be more cooling to wear.
Well, you know, Sharice and I, before we joined BFM, we worked in, you know, pretty, I would dare say, a little bit more state industries, right? Mm. So for the last 20 years, I did have dress codes, you know. And
look at you now.
And look at me now. I'm in a jeans with a big hole. Big hole, and I'm wearing Birkenstocks. I'll confess that on air. But even in my old job, I think I never really followed the rules 100%. I was always a little bit of a rebel. And because it was just so boring, right? Dress codes are boring, and you have to, like, if you wanted to look like everybody, I mean, then it's like almost a uniform. And my dress code wasn't a uniform, but it was quite close to that.
Yeah, I don't know whether I could do that because I've obviously only worked in companies with a very casual culture where you can essentially wear whatever you want. So, for example, today I'm in a BFM t-shirt, leggings, and a pair of slippers. So it's this is the kind of thing that you can do in a casual culture that you wouldn't be able to do in banking, in policymaking, which is the other industries that both of you were in. So I don't know whether I would be able to, after this, conform to a kind of like a black and white, you know, skirt suit and pants suit type situation.
This will blow your mind, Lynn. When I first joined banking in the bank that shall remain unnamed in 1998, mm-hmm. women could not wear trousers.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Right.
I think people cannot relate anymore. This sounds insane, right? Yes. But those were the days. Mm. And I remember asking the HR manager, but the guy can wear trousers. Why can't I? She goes, no, women have to wear skirts. I'm like, what decade are we in? But look how far we've come. So, yeah. We push the boundaries every day. And we actually have to thank the Silicon Valley in many ways, right?
Yes, I think so, because the tech industry has become very famous for completely flouting, throwing dress codes out the window. Because I guess the idea in particularly in companies in Silicon Valley is that it's not how you look when you come to work, it's the kind of work that you do. But at the same time, if you think about it, going to work in a place like Silicon Valley, the culture there is so casual that you'd probably be considered a bit of a rebel or a bit of a maverick if you turned up in formal wear.
Exactly, in a suit and like a shirt with cufflinks.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised though. I mean, Malaysia has changed a lot. I mean, the banking sector, all consultancy jobs, I mean, they've started to sort of dress down. They are mm-hmm. not as strict as it used to be.
Yes, Goldman Sachs, I think, relaxed their dress codes.
And I've heard a lot of banks as well. They've changed that as well. But one thing about all this is that I'm a bit concerned is that once you give that flexibility or that freedom for people to choose what they wear, then, you know, whether or not it creates a new problem, which is a status symbol. Because some clothes could be more expensive than others, and it starts, you know, people will start looking and start questioning their dress code and whether or not I should follow suit and so forth, and you know that, and it creates a whole different problem. That's when I do appreciate uniformity in some ways, because it does create some level of equality at work, you know.
Well, you could be like one of our producers, right, who has 8 black Uniqlo t-shirts. I mean, he's his own little mini Steve Jobs here. So
I don't know who you're referring to, but anyway.
Yeah, I think this the interesting thing that this article highlights is that you have to break these dress codes with intent to be accorded that kind of social status. And there are certain rules that you shouldn't break. Like, for example, if you are in an industry where wearing ties is the norm, you can't go and meet your boss, for example, or meet a client without wearing a tie, because that's seen as showing a lack of respect. So in that case, sartorial rebellion would backfire on you. But you could at the same time push the envelope a little bit, maybe wear a pair of red sneakers, you know, to work, where otherwise you would be wearing formal shoes. And that is a little bit more of a gray area. It's a very interesting sort of culture that we see, and how that changes over time in different countries and different cultures. Because I think we here tend to follow a more of an Asian conforming culture compared to, say, the US. So, but it is nonetheless a filtering through, and we shall see where the dress codes take us in the next couple of years. So we're coming up on the 6:30 news, but be sure to WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio to tell us how you deal with dress codes, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because we definitely do want to hear from you, and we'll take a look at some messages in a little while, so be sure to stay tuned. But here's A Little Less Conversation by Elvis Presley, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Don't Let Me Down Gently by The Wonder Stuff, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Sharitz and Xiao Ning. So Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad has a rule of thumb, and he says if it's illegal offline, it's illegal online. Now, he was speaking at the opening of the new Facebook Malaysia offices, and he basically gave us a lesson in internet etiquette from a 93-year-old. So I think that's in itself is quite impressive. But I guess this is the problem that he's addressing is one that still hasn't really been solved, because this is the nature of the internet. It's a lot more free, and it's a lot more ungoverned. different than physical interaction.
As well.
It's borderless. And you can reinvent yourself online. There are seemingly no repercussions for what you might say or do over social media versus what you would do in real life. So Tun Mahathir also called for Facebook to work with the Malaysian government more to help implement rules, particularly against hate speech, or he said speech that could incite racial tensions, specifically through their community standards enforcement reporting system. And I don't know about you, but I'm a little bit dubious about this. Granted, I agree that companies like Facebook should be taking some responsibility for what is happening on their platform, but I am very skeptical of more rules or more laws being introduced to address the things that we say, because I think that we have more than enough legislation dealing with that already.
That's right. So we have the CMA at the moment, and we have the fake news bill that was introduced early last year. So those are the two things. And the difference between, a lot of people were questioning about the fake news bill, wasn't it? I mean, what, it seems redundant because we already have the Communication Multimedia Act. But I think, based on my understanding, is that it's more of trying to get the, trying to make the whole, the process of complaint between those who are affected with the social media platform more efficient in comparison to the typical CMA, right? But yeah, that's interesting about free speech and online and how there is that extreme, especially in a diverse community like us, that there are the other spectrum of individual group of individuals that may not be able to digest civil communication,
discern what is fake and what is not fake.
Yeah, and also being able to take in, for an example, even comments or, just criticism from the other side of the spectrum.
Yeah, it's just that instinctive, immediate outrage, right? That you see sometimes from social media, the backlash against what seems like an innocuous statement, but some people have taken offense at. I think that is one of the hallmarks of social media, that kind of viral backlash situation that sometimes happens. But I guess this is quite interesting to me because of the, I guess, why this kind of thing happens. Because this doesn't happen in real life communication. It happens, it's chiefly something almost limited to the online space. And it makes me think that, is it because we don't, there's no accountability to a certain extent, or is it because that we don't see other people online as people? Because you are looking at you are reacting to something you see on a screen. You're not reacting to a person sitting in front of you making that statement. You can't see their reactions. You don't associate them as a human being, almost.
That's true. It's very easy to just press send without much consideration, right?
Yeah.
And the question is, I if we go back and look at some of the laws, right, do you think that it kind of could be abused to silence opposition?
There you go. I mean, that's how we understood it.
Isn't
before.
It? Yeah. And what is alarming is that these fake news bills, it's not just Malaysia, but it's going around the world. You have it in Singapore. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be one of the first countries. Russia.
Actually, Philippines is catching on.
We were the first country in the region to have a fake news bill. We have there that very dubious honour. So Singapore was the second.
Oh my, they're second for once.
But we have plans to retract it, if I'm not mistaken.
We do, but
we
it's
do,
currently
but
stuck
it was,
in the
it's
Senate.
Stuck in the Senate, yeah. That's right.
But even very first world countries like France and Germany have these fake news, or in the case of Germany, is removal of hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
And in France, is fake news. So it's not just countries which, in the past have some legacy over trying to clamp down on press freedom and social rights, but it's also a first world problem. And I don't know whether this legislation is a quick way to resolve what is a very new form of communication. In the past, when you defame someone, it would be very traditional, right? It would be either you printed it on a newspaper, you said it, and it was then quoted. But now you could do it almost instantaneously online. Hmm. And the problem is, you don't even know who the originator or who the person that started it first, right?
Yeah, and there's also, so that's an interesting thing, an element that to that is also reach, because in the past when you were defaming, if you defamed someone, for example, a lot of the times it would be through a you would have to specifically do so through a platform like the newspaper, like a public forum that had access to a lot of people. If you said something bad about maybe a colleague to five people in your workplace, that's not really, that doesn't really count, right? But when it comes to social media, you can have you can work with five people in an office space on a day-to-day, but you can have 15,000 followers on Instagram or Twitter. So that is an entirely different ballgame that we're talking about in terms of reach online that people have access to.
And then one more thing is, I think Toon M is also calling on these social media platforms to be accountable, right? For mm-hmm. Facebook, and, you know, that they have some control over what people put online.
They do have guidelines, though. Yeah.
Yeah, and actually even the European Commission has a code of conduct on how, and they've called for, earlier I think this year, they called on social media platforms to be more accountable for what's posted on their platforms by social media users. Okay, well let us know what you think. How do you act online, and how do you gauge that kind of interaction? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll take a look at some messages after this, so be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. That was Selamat Hari Raya by Saloma, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Sharit Abdullah and Wong Shaoning. Thank you for all your messages. We've been discussing emails, dress codes, as well as online etiquette this morning, so we've got a couple of messages on those discussions. MJ says, when I joined a consulting firm in the 90s, we were only allowed to wear dark colours, blue, grey, black or white, and no casual Fridays and no trousers for women. Now I'm with a company with no dress code and I scratch my head for 20 minutes every morning deciding what to wear. So black Uniqlo t-shirts don't sound too bad.
Well, she's a woman after my own heart. She knows what I mean, right? When we weren't allowed to wear trousers. It was just... Imagine 20 years ago, you know, that long ago, right? It's like, seems from like another planet altogether.
But what would have happened if you'd broken that dress code?
I mean, in those days, they would have sent me a HR letter warning me to dress appropriately. Yeah.
If I were to share the same office as you, Wong Shaoning, back then, and if you were to complain about this with me, I'll just say, hey, you signed the contract. I was like, hey, live with it.
Which is why I always did a little bit of rebelling. I would wear like blue nail polish. Because they didn't have any rules on blue nail polish, for example.
And actually, you do like your nail polish, don't you? Your nails today are pink and polka dotted.
Yes, exactly. But in BFM, we can get away with most things.
But I do have a solution for that whole scratching your head, thinking of what to wear every morning. I mean, I used to have a very standardized clothes, either white or blue, and that helped. Just spend less time and thinking what I need to wear.
Yeah,
boring. I can say, but yeah.
Yes, men with a black sweater.
Yeah.
You know, but I kind of do the same thing as well. So most of my clothes are within a certain color palette. So if I'm feeling really lazy in the morning, I just kind of close my eyes and choose things, and I don't have to think about what matches.
By the way, this weekend, Shaoning is going to get married to my sweater.
What? Why didn't I get an invitation, Charis?
I didn't even know about it. Well, at least somebody's marrying me.
Okay, what else do we have?
Anyway, at the same time, we have a WhatsApp from Ali. In my office, my boss used to send shortest but rudest email. He sent things like, I don't care how you do it, but I want it by 5 p.m. today.
Effective, right? I want to send it. I want to send a message like that.
Similarly,
get me on my toes.
On the same subject about emails, Jamie says, I use a lot of exclamation marks in my emails because full stops feel very final. I tend to err on the side of exclamation marks as well, because it makes it seem more friendly than ending a sentence with a full stop.
And are all big caps rude?
I think it depends on the medium.
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, that's just how the language, the norm is.
It's the equivalent of shouting, right?
It is. I think that's how it is.
Oh, okay. So would you consider it rude if you received an email with capital letters?
Oh, I'll seek clarification. I was like, hey, are you pissed? I was like, are you angry? Or, you know.
Okay.
Why? Oh, whoops. Accident. Okay.
All right.
That's fine.
I don't think I would really notice. But then I guess it also depends on what kind of medium and what kind of communication you're trying to get across, right? Mm. If it's maybe all caps in a work email, I would be a little bit perplexed. But in regular conversation or in messages with friends, all caps are kind of the norm for me. So I don't really register them.
say.
Yep. So Zamri says it's about education for people to engage in civil discourse. We need to up our game on education. I think this was talking about online etiquette and how we behave in social media spaces, because this is quite a problem, right?
It's, yeah.
We don't necessarily have these debates, even in real life. And on through a platform like social media, it can get magnified, and it can, I guess, the empathy of it just also disappears. So people become outraged, or people become angry and take offense without actually considering the human element to that conversation. Thank you so much for your messages this morning. We've had some interesting discussions, and we'll be back with more after the 7 o'clock news. But first, Bring It Back Again by Stray Cats, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.